Good afternoon, and welcome to the Jewish Policy Center webinar. I am Shoshana Bryan, Senior Director of the JPC, and your host. There are, again, a lot of you out there today, and I think I know why. You're confused. I'm confused, and that's why our guest is Harold Rode. Harold is going to bring together a lot of the regional strands out there, Israel, Hamas, various parties in Syria, including the Kurds, plus Turkey and Lebanon and the Houthis and Iran, all of which are engaged in warfare of one sort or another, but interestingly, not all of whom are engaged in warfare against Israel. So context, we need context. Harold can provide it. He actually provided me with an outline of the things he was going to talk about because it is complicated. So we will go with a short JPC commercial today, and then we will get to Harold. JPC was founded in 1985. To provide perspectives and analysis of foreign and domestic policy by scholars, academics, and commentators. You can find us on our website, jewishpolicycenter.org, jewishpolicycenter.org. There you can sign up for our insight articles and our magazine, In Focus. The spring issue of In Focus Quarterly will be up next week. It is our domestic issue. I know some of you think we've given up our domestic side. We have not. It's a great issue. Come and see it. It is devoted to changes in policy, government, and probably attitude since the election. And we have a new edition. Go on the website and look under our In Context section. And we're running a lot of up-to-the-minute reporting by Barry Shaw in Israel. You hear Barry periodically on this program. He is right in the middle of everything. And he is putting some of that on our website. That's jewishpolicycenter.org. So the JPC supports a strong American defense capability, U.S.-Israel security cooperation, and missile defense. Right now, our most important job is to support the legitimacy and security of Israel against anyone who would deny them. And now more than ever, we support the government of Israel and the IDF in their defense of the people and in bringing the perpetrators of October 7th to justice. And as Prime Minister Netanyahu said, and President Trump said, and the U.S. Senate agreed last week, ensuring that Hamas has neither military nor governing power in Gaza in the future. And finally, we are committed to support for ending the malign influence of the mullahs of Iran for Israel's sake and to help bring about a broad regional peace. Our guest today is Harold Rode, distinguished senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute. He holds a PhD in Ottoman history from Columbia University. When Columbia University was a great university.
Yes.
Specializing in the history of Turkish, Arab, and Iranian people. He speaks Arabic, Turkish, Persian, French, and Hebrew, with some Italian and Spanish thrown in on
oh,
the
enough, side. Enough.
Harold has studied and traveled extensively around the world. He has done research in libraries in Egypt, Israel, Syria, Jordan, Iran, Afghanistan, Turkey, Uzbekistan, and Kazakhstan. And he put all that education to good use, serving as an advisor on Islamic affairs in the Office of the Secretary of Defense Net Assessment from 1994 to 2010. And today,
longer.
He is going to, yes, and longer. Today, he is going to tell us what we need to know about a place that we never seem to quite understand. Harold Rode, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Shoshana. Always a great pleasure. It's not polite words. I mean it. Being with you. We go back a very, very long time.
We do.
I guess that means I'm old. I won't talk about you.
Well, if you're old. Okay. I'm old.
Okay.
Go for it.
Let's start with this. My mentor, basically he was almost really like my father, was Bernard Lewis, the late, probably the greatest scholar of the Middle East. And he had a dictum. If you're talking with other people, if you're dealing with other people, you must understand the world as they do. Because only after you do, then you can formulate policy of what we should do. Now, I spent 28 years at the Pentagon and was involved in all sorts of other government agencies except the CIA. They didn't like me. What I noticed more than anything is that so many of our experts, no, maybe I am too, But so many of our experts there didn't know the languages, the cultures, didn't really care about them. And they all saw the ones, the moment you speak English, you're closet Americans. You really think like us. You're interested in American sports teams. And most of the Middle Eastern nations or peoples of the Middle East figured that out and they learned to talk American. And what I learned is that they learned very well how to use American culture to get what they wanted from us. And one of the things that they did was they tried to make us feel guilty. And to something, a quote again that Bernard Lewis once saw, there was an Egyptian diplomat talking to a State Department employee, whatever, at a diplomatic party, and the Egyptian was haranguing him. The State Department guy. And the State Department guy ran to, oh my God, what did we do? What can we do to put it right? Now, that is not the way to make policy for the American point of view. America is the most serious, most powerful country on the face of the earth. We don't need to kowtow to bow down to others. I just trying to think to give you an example. People in the Middle East have very, very strong identities. We tend to think of religion as Shiite, Sunni, Christian, Jewish, I don't know, Buddhist, Hindu, and we look at them religions as we do in America. Well, I would just ask from an American point of view, we know Christianity is a religion. If someone were to say to you, the Christian people, we'd look like, what? We know that there are people who are Christian, but there is no such thing from our point of view as Christian, the Christian people. Now I ask you about Jews. There's the Jewish religion and the Jewish people. No one has a problem with that one, which says that they don't see Christianity and Judaism as the same way. Judaism is a Middle Eastern way of looking at the world where religion and politics are one. It's Passover, which we'll have in about 4 weeks. The national liberation of the Jewish people, that sounds political. Or is it a religious holiday? We can't really answer that question. Now, why is this important here? I've heard, as I mentioned, the State Department, and I just am using that as an example. You will see people who this is their responsibility. And here's a story that happened with the Kurds at one point. We never would deal on a serious level before Iraq was liberated from Saddam with the Kurds. They would always be low level, whatever. Now, once Iraq was liberated from Saddam, and the Iraqis chose Jalal Talabani as the head, the president. It's like a queen or a king. He really didn't have much power. All of a sudden, the president of the United States was prepared to see him. Now, why is this important? They come, and the Kurds brought with them, besides Sunni Iraqis and Shiite Iraqis, meaning Arabs, they brought a lot of their own family, which are the Kurds. And they had a meeting with the president and all sorts of senior officials at the White House. And then they went back to Blair House and they called me, and I was out of government by that time. I've been out of government since 2000, I think January 2011, if I'm correct, or maybe 2010. And they said, Harold, come down. We want to talk with you. So I come down to Blair House, and they're sitting. Once I walk in, they start laughing, not at me. They said, a very senior official who had a lot of experience in the Middle East, a Middle East expert, looked at them and said, stop thinking of yourselves as Kurds. Think of yourselves as Iraqis. Now, Iraq is a modern identity. It's 100 years old, more or less. Kurds are an ancient identity of 3,000 years. What do you think means more to them? Borders change. What is northern Iraq could be another state very quickly. And that is how, and the Kurds are like laughing. What do they think we are? They don't understand us. Now, another thing, and I want to get now into the Syria thing, because Syria is so much more complicated and at the same time easier if you understand it as the people in Syria, this
Let's
land.
put up the map of Syria so we can help people do that.
Okay, good.
Can we have our
Okay.
Syria map? There you go.
Good. Okay, now let's start, first of all, with a little explanation. And before we deal with the map, and when you will see, it's like it becomes a very different issue. What is Syria today was part of a bigger unit before, meaning the Ottoman Empire. The largest group were Sunni Arabs. There were a lot of Kurdish Sunnis out in the northeast. That's the big yellow thing at the top right of the screen, a little that area there. And it doesn't mean that there aren't Kurds in other areas. You see yellow across the top there. There are Kurds there. And in a lot of the areas which are colored blue, there are all sorts of little dots of yellow. This is going to become important in a moment. There is no Syrian identity. What there is are, from a Middle Eastern point of view, there are Sunni Arabs. There are Alawite Arabs. The Alawites are the green section. That's where they're mostly located. There are Shiites who are Arabs, but there are Shiites who are what are called Turkmen. And Turkmen are some type of Turk. I'm on purpose trying to confuse you because now you will understand how confusing identities are. There is not a Syrian identity. Syria is a modern creation. It's again about 100 years old. And these people have been what they are for 1,000, 2,000, sometimes even more years. So it doesn't make any sense. Let's just go to the bottom area where you see the purple. That's by and large Druze. And oh, thank you for doing that, for putting the little arrow there. And then move it over, please, also a little to the left. And a little up, and you see another purple area. That is Israel's now occupying that area and should be staying there because it is the highest area on a place in the in all. It overlooks Damascus. You can see sometimes on a clear day, even up to the Turkish border up north. That's where the yellow areas is straight above it. And you can see out certainly to the Mediterranean Sea. Now, if this area is overlooking Israel, and it's overlooking Lebanon, and it's overlooking all these other minority areas, and if the people running it, whatever ethnic group they are, religio-ethnic group, because it's a combination, they're going to worry about their interests. Now, there are all these minorities. The largest group is Sunni Arab. But when in 2011, the ex-dictator Assad, who was an Alawi, that's where the green coloring is on the left side of the map, he worked with some minorities. His biggest enemy were the Sunni Arabs. That is on the left side of the map, the light blue colored areas. Now, to show you again how they think about things, not how we do, Syria was created after World War I. It was a French mandate. And the head Alawite leaders, and I could describe their religion, but that doesn't really explain things from a political point of view, so we will leave it. What happens is that the Sunnis, on the left side of the map, which is light blue, that's basically the Sunni area. And the map also is not, in some areas, especially in the lower right, not 100% right, because there is a group in the which and it becomes very important, you'll see shortly. There is this light blue area. It looks like it has one sort of purple or red dot in there. That area is largely Arab Sunni, but there are other little groups interspersed there, including Druze. Now, the Alawis wrote a letter in the 1930s. And I have a copy of this. It's, of course, in Arabic. And we can thank Professor Moti Kedar because he's the one who published it. Now, the Ottawans are saying, look, please, they're saying to the French authorities, we want an independent Alawi state. That's the green area, again, on the left-hand side. Why do we want them? Because the Sunnis, the Sunni Arabs especially, look at us, the word they call us, they don't call us Alawi or Nusayri. There were two different words for what they are. They call us, in the singular in Arabic, Abd, which is Evid in Hebrew, which means slave. The plural is Abid. They call us and treat us like we are slaves. Now, watch this. I mean, Assad, the former leader of Syria, who it was, he took over in a coup. The people didn't choose him. None of these countries in the Middle East, with the exception of Israel, do people choose their leadership. Anyway, there were seven great or important Alawi families, and they're the ones who signed the letter to the French authorities. Now, one of those people was the great grandfather of this terrorist leader of Syria. This was Bashar al-Assad. His father, Hafez, the one who took over the state. And they want now they why they say we want the state because they treat us, they treat all non-Sunnis as like slaves. And the example that they use, remember this is late 30s, early 40s, is how the Sunnis are treating the Jews in then British mandated Palestine. In other words, it's all of us non-Sunnis who, if you wish, swim in a Sunni sea. And the Sunnis will never treat us as equal human beings. They see us as slaves. They see that only they should be the rulers. Now, how do you think the Alawis would feel, and the Druze? Now, the Druze is the purple area at the lower left-hand side of the map. They treat all of us, as they were saying, as inferiors. The example of the Alawis, supposedly the big haters of Israel. Why did Assad say that? Why did he, excuse me, why was Assad the dictator so viciously anti-Israel, at least on the surface? And that is that when a minority takes over a state from somebody else, they got to go overboard to prove that, if you wish, the maybe it's a strange metaphor, that they're kosher, meaning that they are real Arabs. That's what when the communists took over the Soviet Union, or what became the Soviet Union, the people who destroyed Judaism in the Soviet Union are Jews who threw their lot in with the Soviet government. Once they destroyed Judaism, they were all exterminated by Stalin. And that's what so they went overboard to be commies. And the same is true of the Alawis in Syria. Now, if they're writing a letter to the French authorities and comparing themselves to the Jews of Palestine, there's something to think about here. This is how they are thinking about things, not we. And not we, the United States, in this thing, or Europe, because, oh, we have our specialists and all that. Who is the leader of this? Now, Assad's family took over in a coup. And let's talk about Syria today. Who took over? It was the Sunnis who, when they saw that Iran was basically not able to resupply or deal, get Hezbollah, which is Hezbollah was nothing more in Lebanon than an Iranian fifth column, part of the Iranian military, if you wish. Then Erdogan in Turkey, and he's got his own problems that hopefully we'll get to. Erdogan in Turkey, who is an Islamic fundamentalist. There's this Muslim Brotherhood. What, do you have membership cards? Nobody has membership cards in the Middle East. We have such things in the West. But he is an important leader in the Muslim Brotherhood, which wants to throw out all of the Muslim people who call themselves Muslims but aren't, that is like the Saudis, they hate each other. The Saudis are Sunni, the Turks are Sunni, and Qatar, their religion, if their type of Sunnism is the same as Saudi Arabia's back in the late 1700s, 1800s, but they would got that, so but they hate each other today because they're fighting over, what they used to say in the neighborhood where I grew up in Philadelphia, which was mostly black. If you don't go to the church that I go to, you're doing the work of the devil. In other words, my church is right and yours is wrong. We're both Christians, and in this case, we're both Sunnis, but my way is right and your way is wrong. So you see, everybody against everybody else. Now, all of a sudden, Erdogan, who trained his Al-Qaeda, ISIS, it's all the same. The names morph, but they have the same goal: take over and basically the hell with the non-Muslims. And so these people went south. That is Erdogan's people that he trained, and this guy whose name is Jolani or Ahmed Ashara originally. All of a sudden, he gets appointed by the world. Oh no, he's running Damascus. He's the leader. That's garbage. It isn't true. Oh, and then all of a sudden, what is he doing? These are Arab Sunnis, and they're killing people. They're killing the Alawites. We've seen all these videos on the net, and it makes Gaza look boring with whatever. People that were killed, which was almost nothing, because the Israelis have a very different policy. They don't go around killing people intentionally. They do their damnedest not to. But so they were killing Alawis galore, and they were threatening. They said, "We're taking over the country. State Department and company appoint this guy Jolani, who now, instead of wearing his thick Islamic garb, changed with a beautiful suit, and he's clean shaven, not clean shaven. He's got a beautifully trimmed beard, and he's talking nice. And oh well, he's a moderate. There are no moderates and there are no extremists in the Middle East. They're each people with their own interests. And the Americans, I hereby dub thee Sir Moderate, means I can deal with you. Well, what are these moderate people doing? I talked about the slaughter of the Alawis, and they in the beginning threatened the Druze. There was in the map that we had there. It was in the bottom left corner. Can we bring back the map again for a moment? Because and good, thank you. And bring it so we can see the bottom left, please, a little higher, if possible. If not, no, the other way. Please make it a little smaller, if you can. Okay, good, good. One, no. That was good. The previous one is better. Good, great. Okay, now you can see at the very left at the bottom a gray area. That is Israel. The white area there is the Golan Heights, which is clearly part of Israel. America certainly recognize it, but you see, it's white. So whoever made this map is not dealing with the reality of the area. Now, if we go to the gray, excuse me, the purple area right above the Golan Heights, that's the little purple area. And the big, if you see next to it on the right, there's like a little black blob, that's Damascus. Now, if we go down south, you see where the Druze are. They're the purple. Good, thank you. And that area in between, which is called light blue, I've been in that area. I know a lot of people who know a lot more about it than I. And yes, it's largely Arab Sunni, but as I said, it's also got Druze. If you noticed, in the last few weeks, the Israeli government, Netanyahu, who has been doing some wonderful things lately, Netanyahu announces publicly that he wants no, let's call them Jolani forces, Shara forces, let's call them the Muslim Brotherhood, let's call it Al-Qaeda, it doesn't matter what the name is. There will be no forces south of Damascus. That's that black blob that we pointed to before in the south, in the lower left-hand corner. There will be Israel will tolerate no forces south of Damascus from the Muslim Brotherhood terrorists. That's Sharia, that its State Department and others in Europe have anointed as the leader of Syria. I don't understand why we do these things. It's ludicrous. Anyway, we need somebody to deal with. Oh, of course. He doesn't talk for Syria. He talks for his terrorists. That's it. Anyway, Israel announced that that whole area, which is the light blue through the black blob, Damascus, and then down, is there. There will be no let's call them Al Qaeda, Sharia Jolani forces, and Israel will protect the Druze. Who are our brothers? That's what Netanyahu said. Well, he didn't say we want to annex this area to Israel, and he's not talking about what will happen in that area. That's for everybody to decide there. That is where in Syria the largest group of Druze is, where that big purple blob is in the lower left-hand side there. Now, all of a sudden now, and here are these Druze. Do they want to be Syrians? No, they want to survive first and foremost. We don't understand in the West what survival means. We got to be protected against the people who either say that we're not Muslims, so therefore we have to be second class at best. That would be nice if we were second class citizens. Or if they believe that they left Islam, and the Druze left Islam, they're not Muslims. They left Islam about maybe the 1000s. I'm not my I'm it's 1000s and a little later, but the exact years don't matter. What matters is that when they did, and they followed a different way, the Sunnis, I'm talking now how the Druze see it, there was a slaughter in what is today northern Syria. You see a little in the upper left, there's a yellow section in that area, all across to the next yellow section. There were Druze all over the place there. And 1.6 million Druze were killed by the Sunnis. So you could imagine that the Druze are not particularly happy with the Sunnis. In the Middle East, you never forget. It's not that, and there is no way of everybody getting along together unless there is a senior figure, a powerful guy who holds everything together. But if can't do it, everything falls apart. That's the way it is. It doesn't matter what I want or what I think. I'm not from there, and I don't think like them. I know I think somehow how to think like them, but that is it. Now, what's going to happen here in the future? Well, let's put it this way. You can have your choice. Allah knows, or Hashem knows, or God knows. I can tell you that the characteristics of Allah and Hashem, the Jewish way that we use to refer to God, it is one God, but they're very different, and it's not a time to talk about the differences, because that could be a talk on its own, because then you would wonder, do we believe in the same God? We can argue, we Jews can argue with God. Abraham argued when God wanted to destroy all of Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham said, wait a minute, God did it much more politely than I'm saying it now. Are there any honorable, are there honor, you know, honorable good people in Sodom and Gomorrah? And God says, something like that. Yeah, there are 50. Excuse me. Abraham asks, are there 50? And God says, no, they're not. And we go down, we get to five. And Abraham says, well, you've got to get them out of there. You can't kill these people. They're honorable, good people. And God said, okay, I'll get them out. Here we can argue with God. In Islam, Muslims cannot argue with God. I shouldn't be talking about the whole thing, but
Okay,
believe
so
me, they
Harold,
fight about these things. That's the way it is.
let me break in here for a second,
Please.
because you're right, we're not going to argue about God. But I, at least, and I think our listeners today have a much better picture of where the Druze are and why it is that Israel said they're going to defend them. But would you look now at the Kurds force for a second, and specifically the issue of the agreement between the Kurds and HTS, and even more specifically, the merger of their militaries? And how did that happen? That doesn't seem, you know.
Okay. Can we ask for the Syria map again? We're going
Sure.
to need it because something else is going on here.
Thank you.
Now, Shoshana, God forbid, we're old friends, but let's say the Bryans and the Rhodes, my family name, we've been fighting each other for years. All of a sudden, we agree to something. First of all, a signed agreement means nothing in the Middle East. It's a piece of paper that you can tear out. It's the way you get to where you want to go. The fact is that the what they're calling HTS, that's just it's Al-Qaeda in another form. They are saying they don't have the forces to go up into the northeast and deal with the Kurds at the moment. And the Kurds don't want them to, so they'll come up with some agreement. And the moment the agreement is no, one side says the hell with it, all hell's gonna break loose. Bending their forces together. No, it sounds good to us in the West, just like we have dubbed Jolani as the leader of Syria. No, I'm going to come up with another view. Watch this. I was talking before about Israel and the Druze. And Israel, it says, look, the big area that Druze down, we're not talking about annexing the area, not making it part of Israel. But we will defend it, and we will bring even some of those local Druze to work in Israel. In other words, they should reconnect with their fellow Druze in the Golan first, and in Israel, northern Israel, after that, and all that. But there's something else going on. Who else is a who there's one other force in this country that has a long-standing good feeling, soul bond with Israel and the Jews, and that's the Kurds. Now, watch this. And I need your map, I need your little pointer down there, please. Okay, put it in that big purple blob where good, thank you. Now, Netanyahu is talking when he mentioned about the Ceuta. That's that province, and you can see the province line. It also goes east. That is a little to the right, and there's a line which goes there, which looks like it's complete. Good. Thank you. Completely empty. Well, now let's move up along the border of Syria. In quotes. Good. Keep going. This area is almost completely empty. You can stop for the moment. That area is completely empty. Now, where are the Kurds in most of the Kurds in Syria? Can you move now along the border? Keep moving up. Thank you. You've crossed the Euphrates River. Well, you made it to the Kurdish areas. And I want to tell you that the Kurdish areas extend much further south than that yellow on that map. And it's not a problem with whoever chose the map. The maps of Syria and maps of most of the Middle East are jokes. I don't know how we don't have people who are on the ground who are prepared to really figure this out. And if they did, they wouldn't know who they're dealing with because we don't have the people who know the languages and the cultures. Now, that line goes at least, can you now bring the little pointer down, straight down? That's fine. Stop, to at least about there and maybe even up to the river. We don't know. Keep going down. There you come to the Euphrates River. Now, that whole area is in some part controlled by the Kurds. Now, let's look at the Druze area, right down where you were before. Good. That whole area in between is basically empty. Now, the Kurds are overwhelmingly Sunni, But they feel oppressed by everybody else, the Kurdish Sunnis, but the Turkish Sunnis, the Arab Sunnis, the Iranians. It doesn't matter. And look, what do we have here? And this is a possibility for the future that I think is worth thinking about. You have the Israel-controlled area, or controlled in the sense that there won't be troops south of Damascus into the Druze area, and where the little pointer is right now, you want to shake it a bit that people see it. Good, good. Thank you. See the white there? That's the whole, what is called Soweda province. And that area is overwhelmingly Druze. And could you imagine a road, let's say, in that empty area where nobody basically is? It's not nobody, but it's almost nobody. All the way up to the Kurdish area. You can bring the little pointer up again, up further. I don't know, it disappeared. But anyway, to the yellow at the top right, and the area right next to it, which is Iraq, is Iraqi Kurdistan, or the Kurdish Regional Government. Now, the Kurds don't get along with each other. The Kurds have a proverb which says the only friends the Kurds have are the mountains, because they're also killing each other galore. But they all share one thing, an admiration and respect for Israel and what Israel has been able to do. Can you imagine a corridor? All we need is a two-lane highway through, or a four-lane highway from the Kurdish area into the Druze area, and they don't have a historical problem with each other. And then that goes into the Golan, and then that goes westward into Israel. And guess what? The Kurds' real problem is that it has no port out to the world, so it's landlocked. If this whole area, which is empty, all of a sudden united, not united, or worked together, here you have an Israel, Druze. There are a few other peoples who are not Arab Sunnis, all the way up to the Kurdish areas. I know this sounds far-fetched,
Yes.
but I'm trained to think about things in context, and that gives you an understanding of the possibilities for the future.
Okay, so
Go
stop there for a second.
ahead.
Stop there for a
Sure,
second,
sure.
because what you're saying now sounds very much like the kind of bizarre propaganda that came before the Abraham Accords. Yes, you can have the UAE and you can have Israel and you can have a railroad, which they're working on. And you could go across to the ports in Israel from UAE, and people said, "You're nuts. There's no way that Israel is going to make peace with the Arabs." But you're suggesting kind of the same thing. You take unhappy people in a region, and you allow them to work with other unhappy people that they get along with more or less. And you're kind
Not
of
allow, enable.
okay,
You
enable,
create the conditions. Not allow.
enable.
You're not. Yeah, that's it. It's a very
Okay.
different word, please. Yeah.
So you're envisioning, and I know you're not saying this will happen, but only that it's a something to think about. Kurds
It's
down
the
to the
Middle East. Anything's possible. We all of a sudden had the Abraham Accords, which in Arabic are called the Defense Accords. That should tell you something.
which it does. And I would have thought, I did think before 2020 that that was a little bit far-fetched. And this is also far-fetched.
Of course, just as far-fetched.
Well, yes, maybe. But here's the question. At what point did the Sunnis say, "Hey, wait a second. We're bigger than they are. We're stronger than they are." If they want to try to make an arrangement that works with Israel, that allows them economic opportunity or security or whatever it is that they're going to get, then we have to go back to war. Are we setting up for another war too?
No. The Kurds have
Why
been
not?
doing very well. And they get supplied however they get supplied. And they are, and by the way, there are all these women units and all that. And why women
Yes.
units are important, I don't give a damn about the woke stuff. The reason is that there is a view in Islam that if you are killed by a woman, you don't get your virgins. You're not a martyr. Please understand it as they do. And by the way, these Kurdish fighting women's units. They're awesome. Absolutely awesome.
I've met some of those women. They are awesome. Yes.
You don't want to mess with them.
Not
They're
me.
sweet. Yeah, they're sweet, but they're deadly, and that's what we need. It's like Marines in America. They're wonderful, they're highly intelligent, sweet, and they are deadly. You
Okay,
want everything.
so now you have a deal of a sort, as you say, a paper deal between the Kurds and the HTS, and it may not last more than a month or whatever it
Whatever
lasts.
HTS is,
Whatever.
I'm going to call
Whatever
them
HTS is.
ISIS or Al-Qaeda.
Okay, let's call them ISIS for now.
Okay.
Al-Jawani has a long history of being that. So we'll call it
Of
ISIS
course.
and the Kurds. Marriage of convenience for the moment. The part that interests me, and maybe you can explain this, is that the Kurdish forces would operate with the ISIS forces or be absorbed by the ISIS forces. And one of the things that bothers me here is that the SDS has control of prisons, which are full of ISIS bad guys. Is it possible that Al-Jawlani is saying, let's do this, and by the way, I'll get the prisons and I'll get my guys back, and then I'll tear up the agreement?
Joshana, that is a logical thing, yeah. But I guarantee you, the Kurds have thought of that right away. They know how discriminated against, and they know who ISIS, Al-Qaeda, HTS, or whatever alphabet soup we choose to call them, or they, you know, and okay, well, we got to find out more about that group that hasn't existed for more than 10 minutes. That's our problem. Look at the people, look at their history, look at who and what they are, look at who their friends are. Now you know who they are. Forget the names. What I'm telling you is this is part of a greater realignment going on throughout the Middle East. I cannot believe that the Kurds would let go. Maybe I'm wrong. I have no way of knowing the future. That they would let the Al-Qaeda, ISIS, HTS, Santa Claus, whatever people out of prisons. Why? The Americans are the ones who have backed with weapons and whatever and fight alongside the Kurds up in the Northeast. And what is the reason America's there? It's to fight ISIS. So if the Kurds would let them go, the Americans are going to get mad. Is that worth it? I don't think so. For them, I'm trying to think like they think. I do not care how we think.
So we have some questions from people. And I know I want to get to Iran for a second, and we're going to run out of time. But so one of the people who's listening sees, pretty much as I see, and maybe I didn't express it clearly, the potential for a multi-sided war breaking out because all of these people have arms. None of these people like each other. You know, what happened to the Alawites in many ways is a terrible, terrible thing in the last couple of weeks, but it's basically retribution for all kinds of Alawite killing of other people. Are we looking at the potential for internecine civil war that has maybe four sides or six sides or eight sides?
Or 2,000 sides.
Or 2,000 sides?
Yeah. Well, here's the point, and it's an excellent question, Shoshana. These people, first of all, they never forget. When it comes to how many sides, I don't know. We are looking at all sorts of things. This is how they solve things. What we call come to the table, let's talk about it, come, let us reason together. We call that solving. In the Middle East, what that is called is, I'm trying to think of a word that is appropriate in English, and I mean because I don't want to use curse words, because that's how they would refer to it. Let's say that by compromising, you become compromised. It's a very different meaning in English. In the chances of people can't let that happen because the Arabic phrase, there is no exact thing, but sticks and stones will break my bones. But the Arabic, if they had it, would be, but names will definitely hurt me, meaning my personal honor. If I let myself be compromised, please, you can figure out what I mean here. then that I'm going to be shamed, and I'd rather die and not give in. So there will be no compromises here. And so all these agreements, let me give you the Gulfy answer, that is the UAE, Bahrain answer on Israel. They say to, they've said to the Israelis, especially in the beginning, look, you guys want everybody to love you. And that's Jewish history, because we figured if you love us, then no one will hurt us. But that is not the way it's been. And in the Middle East, they're basically, they say it much more politely than I am. They're trying to say, get over it. What we have in common, the UAE, Israel, and all, we have common interests. And don't think it's Iran is just the tip of the iceberg. And once Iran is gone, we're going to have a bigger one from their point of view. And here's the thing. Number one, they got money. Israel has high tech. There are all sorts of connections, as you mentioned in the beginning, of these routes. Let's start India, the Gulf, Israel, it's a route, whatever, to Europe through Saudi Arabia. And I don't care, I want to say about everybody's talking about, oh, when will there be relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel? If I were really involved with this, and I'm not involved with any government at the moment, my response is shut up, don't talk about it. Why? The moment you talk about it, the price goes up. And when it comes to the Saudis, relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel in areas that are needed are excellent. What difference does it make if they have an embassy there? They know how to talk with each other. They know how to do things together. Is Al airplanes fly over Saudi space? To the best of my knowledge, they ain't got no problems when they do that. Let's just leave things as they are and develop as they are. Shut up about it. When you go into the marketplaces and you get off your tourist bus and you have only 10 minutes to make a deal, the buyer, the store manager knows that. And so what happens to the price of your rug that, oh, I've been waiting for this my whole life? What happens is the price goes up. But if you have time and you don't, you go into the store, you talk, you have tea, you have coffee, God knows what else, and you're not coming up with something, but you've already put your eye on something, but you don't talk about it, the guy may throw it in the end or something just to make a deal. And you, I don't really want that. You know, it's maybe, I don't. The price goes down. That's what you do with the Saudi. Leave the Saudi thing. You have, at the moment, already very highly in the working, in the process of figuring it all out. I want to
Okay.
say Japan, South Korea, Thailand, Vietnam, India, all the way through, you know, the Gulf countries across Saudi Arabia. And that's airplanes now, and who knows what's going. They're already working on things that no one's really talking about. I only know from people that I hear, not in government people. Anyway, you want to say
So
something, Shoshana? Sorry.
I do, because I don't want to talk about this because we could wreck it for them. But
Yes.
I also got like five questions just now from people who are listening, and
Yeah.
they see that we're coming toward the end of our hour, and they all say the same thing. Turkey, please. So, remembering that we only have, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes, give us Turkey. They want to know what's
Yeah,
going on.
of course. Turkey, it's a
The
big day
short
in
form.
Turkey.
The short form.
And you stop me if necessary,
I
as
will.
usual. Please, I beg you. You
No,
know me,
I
I
won't.
talk too much.
I'll stop
Anyway,
you.
Turkey had a very strange thing happen yesterday. Erdogan has only one rival, and that is the mayor of Istanbul, who we're calling secular. He's not secular. But he believes in the Western, being connected to the Western world. And he has connections with all sorts of very good people without going into it, in the Middle East. Erdogan obviously knows if they would try to call an election or something like this, that he will be defeated by İmamoğlu, Ekrem İmamoğlu. I do not know him, but he's already arrested İmamoğlu and put a few other people in jail. Some democracy, I guess that's Islamic democracy, they have in Turkey. Throw them in. They're arrested and they're being held, but they're not formally in jail yet. Something is going on there. The Turkish economy is in terrible shape. Turkey also has a Turkey is allied with Qatar against the Saudis. We're on the Saudi side because, for whatever many reasons, our enemy and the enemy of the Gulf and the Saudis is Qatar and Turkey. Why? Because they are part of the Muslim Brotherhood, which the Saudis helped create. But then, and it's a long history, what happened was that the Muslim Brotherhood started to fight the Saudi government. So all of a sudden, you were my friend yesterday. You talked about you called it HTS Kurdish Agreement. All of a sudden, boom, the next day it's over. Now the point is they hate each other. There's a bigger hatred. Iran Shiite versus Turkey. Turkey, each of the countries has about the same population. Turkey is a largely Sunni country, a lot less than they say, because they have another group called Alawis or Alevis that's not the same as the Syrian Alevis. And they are some form of Shiites. History, it's fascinating and it matters. Anyway, you have Iran versus Turkey, both of them against America, both of them against Europe, and both of them again versus each other. What is it? It's all together. One day, Shoshana, God forbid, you and I are fighting, and Michael Johnson, who set up everything. Another day, it's you and Michael Johnson against me. The next day, it's Michael Johnson and me against you. It changes on a daily basis, as they say in Arabic, and it fits for everywhere. A day of onions, yom asa, excuse me, a day of honey where everything is great, yom basal. Basal is the Hebrew word batsal, meaning onions. A day of honey, a day of onions. This is it. Turkey is in flux. Its economy is in terrible, terrible shape. Qatar can give money and do whatever like this. Erdogan is nothing more than a traditional Middle Eastern dictator. Trying, he we call we elected a parliament and all that, but come on, he controls everything. If he controls everything, he shouldn't be able to. Then, if he's really it's democracy, then he needs to deal with the parliament, the this. No, he's got it all. So you've got two countries, major countries, Iran and Turkey, in turmoil. And I want to tell you, today is Iranian New Year's. It is a day where, for the 5 or 6 days before and then 5 or 6 days afterwards, it's all happiness. It's all whatever like this. Now, the regime, this is also Ramadan right now, where you must be solemn and serious during the day. At night, you can have your parties. The Iranian regime threatened the Iranian people. No celebrating Nowruz, which means new day, New Year's. It's logical. It's the first day of spring. The Iranians are very logical and thinking people. It's an ancient holiday, pre-Islamic. Khomeini tried to destroy it. Hey, the Iranians, how do they? Oh, I'm just having a good time. By doing this, I am saying, I'm trying to think of a polite word. I'm thinking of a word with F in the beginning. Yours, for your Islam. I am hearing people in Iran saying, I remember when I studied in Iran. People would tell me, I can man naf, man Islam or nafrat mikunam. I hate Islam. We had a great culture before. We had an empire for 1,100 years, and then these Muslims came out of these rat eaters, rodent eaters, whatever, awful things, lizard eaters. That's the other word I was looking for. And now Turkey. Also, these countries are all in upheaval. We cannot predict where how all this was going to go. Look, we always talk about an end strategy and getting out of a war. Every war in history, you can't predict how it's going to go. You figure the end strategy closer to what you see in the end, then you try to figure out what you do. Middle East is in upheaval. I can only say one thing. There's only one country, and it's where I'm in Jerusalem at the moment. I can only tell you what I see going on here is nothing short of awesome. We've had, how long has it been? Like a year and a half, two, whatever it's been for the war. The economy here is doing pretty good, pretty well. How is that? It's a miracle. Not only that, the young people who are serving in the military know who they are. I don't care whether they're religious, secular, or whatever it is. They have a strong Jewish identity. They're going to be want to be part of deciding in the future what this is. They ain't gonna play games. It is beautiful to see this. It's as if one huge deck of cards has been thrown up into the air all over the Middle East. Today we got this, tomorrow we got that. I don't know how it's all going to come out, but I want to tell you, for the United States of America, and we haven't even talked about the Houthis, America's doing a wonderful job so far down there too. It has to all be taken care of. And in the Middle East, when they see power, here's what you do. Let's say I'm not standing up. When I see power, I bend over. I bend over. Of course, I believe in you, Shoshana. You're the real ruler. I'm a nothing. And tomorrow, when I see you're weak, I'll fill your face, God forbid, with bullets. And personally, that would kill me because we're good friends. And I'm gonna be the guy who was all of a sudden on the opposite side of you. So everything, Turkey, Iran, whatever let's call it the Arab world, because the borders don't mean a damn thing. The borders, the tribes, the families across all of the borders, they are meaningless. You got the Kurds, you got the Druze, you got a bunch of other groups, you got the Jews, you got them all. They are all a lot of these minorities, for whatever reasons, and they're different. Israel is the key. I tend to think that some of the people around Trump get this. I don't know these people. I'm just a simple, dumb academic, retired government official. That's it. I hope I've put somewhat together, and I haven't, we haven't, I can do a whole program on Turkey, but that's a different story.
No, I'm going to stop you there because, as people who listen periodically know, I like to end up on a positive note. And my last question is always one that gets a positive response, but you already gave us the positive response. In essence, what you said is that Israel is the strong horse, partly militarily, but also by virtue of the people who live in it and work in it
Yes,
and defend it.
yes.
And so I consider that a fabulous note on which to end the program. And I don't need anything else to make me feel good because that makes me feel good. So, what I would like to do is thank you very much. First of all, for something like 47 years of friendship, thank you.
Oh, you figured it out.
I
Okay.
did. I did. Yeah. It's actually a little more than that. For enlightening us, for helping us understand what a big mess we're looking at. I mean, sometimes you look at Israel and you say, boy, couldn't they have picked like another part of the world where it was calm and peaceful? But no, they didn't. And we
You mean
didn't.
God
And
didn't? That's the way
God
it
didn't.
is.
God didn't. And here we are. So thank you for enlightening us. Thank you for showing us how complicated and how difficult things are. And to our friends and viewers out there, we are off next week, but I promise you a program the week after that will knock your socks off. We will have an Israeli joining us, and it will, you talk about enlightenment. You will be enlightened. So today we got political enlightenment. Today we understand the region. 2 weeks from now we're going to get military enlightenment, and I'll let you know how to sign on before we get there. Harold Rode, thank you very much, and thank you to everybody who listened.
And thank you, Shoshana, and to all the listeners.